main speaker for this evening, Johnny H. from Long Beach.
Hell, the leader's leaving. I haven't even started talking yet. I've never heard anything read so fast in my life. I've got one word to say to the leader tonight: decaf. I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Larry for inviting me down again to share my experience, strength, and hope, and maybe get in another day of sobriety. Basically, that's what it's all about. Trying to stay sober a day at a time and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I consider it some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on here just because I was lucky enough to stumble in here and get sober and stay that way. I usually don't have a band with me. I'm in San Diego. I know anything goes here. The reason I tell you how I think everything is a privilege is because in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the day that our co-founder got sober, he asked the doctor if he could have the privilege of carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I think about that a lot, because what if the doctor would have said no? What if the doctor would have said to him, "You're crazy. You just went to a bunch of whiskey fits here, and you want to talk to my patients? You're just a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. Shut up." Well, I don't know about you, but I'd have been dead a long time ago if that had been the case. So when I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I consider it an unearned privilege. And the reason I tell you that is because everything that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. I mean, Joe alluded to it a little bit. You see, the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget the little over 57, 58 years ago tonight. I came to in a cell in solitary confinement of a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. And because of a loving God, as he expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I don't get nothing else out of this thing at all, I guess I could live with that all the way to the car tonight. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd also like to stand here and go along with the, whatever it is, the theory that that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. Oh, that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. See, I've always had something going on inside of me. I knew there was something wrong with me. From my earliest recollection of life, I haven't seen this much busyness going on since I was out of the Greyhound bus station in Los Angeles. I knew there was something wrong with me from my earliest recollection. I didn't know what it was. I didn't have the slightest idea, but I knew I had to find something because I was restless and irritable and discontented. And I didn't understand then, as I've come to understand today, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly illness that's ever been known to mankind. And make no mistake about it, it is an illness. It was read here tonight in the third chapter. It's not a disease, it's an illness. Our book describes it as a spiritual malady. Or why would we need a spiritual awakening to overcome it? Why would we have to have a set of spiritual principles to keep us grounded long enough to carry the message of the alcohol if we had a disease? Couldn't we just go to the doctor and get some pills? That comes out of the treatment facilities. You don't need to go to the doctor for that. My book is full of things that says it's some type of a malady, a spiritual malady. And the only way an alcoholic of my type can recover from it is to have some type of a spiritual awakening. It means I got to find some type of a spiritual solution. I didn't know that when I was a child sitting on my grandmother's knee at her church, because my grandmother lived till she was 90 years old, and she never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother would come today, my grandmother would think it's a big deal. I've been sober 55 years. Big deal, she'd say, and I had a drink for 90. Yeah. I used to tell her you ought to have a couple, Granny, make you feel better. But my grandmother got everything she needed out of this church. And when I went with a child because I wanted what my grandmother had, even though I didn't know what it was, I didn't get anything. I sat in that church, and everybody was getting something, and I wasn't getting nothing. It took me a long time to realize in my life that there was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church. Something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. See, what I'm doing, I don't know this because I hadn't been into our book. I didn't know that I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here. And that only goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. And what saved my life and my insanity sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day, watching my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar, whiskey that he made. He put it down, he went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all it did. And I guess, according to our book, which is the only authority in Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And it's not a bad reaction, really. If it had been a bad reaction, you'd probably have another speaker here tonight. It was a good reaction. I pursued it into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. And I didn't know that. Because it went inside of me and kind of stilled the madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living and installed in me some type of arrogance that said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. But see, I wasn't ready for what happened next because it doesn't happen to everybody who drinks. Maybe 1 out of 10 people who ingest alcohol and get this abnormal reaction from it. What separates me from everybody else in the world is not my alcoholic emotions. It's not my disease. It's not I go crazy. No. What separates me from everybody else upon the face of the earth, and us other people just like me, is just when I ingest alcohol into my system, I'm entitled to a thing that's called the phenomenon of craving. It's written in our book. That once I take a drink, I'm powerless not to take the next one. I didn't know that. Because what happened to me from my first drink happened to me from my last drink. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, I was pulled off from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol, he pulled me out of a car and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. Just travel around. I went from reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house, a little more macho. Remember, if you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you throw in the towel. I gave it everything I had out there. I gave it all. pursuing this delusion into the gates of insanity or death. It is a delusion, you know. The book says so. And there I am. 25, 26 years old, crawling around this cell in solitary confinement. And that particular day of my life, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. And I don't have any right to have any of them back just because I don't drink anymore. Everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unearned gift that I've received from this God I discovered sitting with you. But there I am. And the funny thing about it, what I'm doing crawling around in that cell in solitary confinement, I'm doing the same thing I did at my grandmother's knee in my grandmother's church as a child. I'm looking for an answer to this dilemma that's haunting me. And I don't know what it is. In November the 4th, 1959, I was sitting in a penitentiary around my little gang that I've been involved in since juvenile hall. And we're sitting around waiting for the connection to come off the visiting screen so we could get loaded. I looked up and I saw some women walk across the yard. And I got up and I wandered into this old Quonset hut of a building. And I sat down. Now that is a macho image. And I didn't know what I was walking into. There was no Quonset. It was up in the mountains somewhere, and I don't know. And I just wandered in this thing, and I sit down in this room, and my life has never been the same since. Now, I didn't have any profound spiritual experience because I hadn't engaged in the program of recovery, so how could I get one? I didn't know what this was. I saw two big A's up on the backboard, and I thought it was some type of an anti-aircraft brigade or something. I didn't know what alcohol. Nobody had ever said to me, what alcoholic nonsense. They just said, you're a blood-sucking parasite in society. You don't have no right being around decent people. Damn, that's not... They didn't know I was sensitive when they said things like to me. It hurt my feelings. Still makes me teary-eyed. But there I said, I don't know what this thing is. I said, the guy said next to me, what is this? He said, this Alcoholics Anonymous. I was embarrassed by that. You got to understand, I'm a big-time gangster. I spent 20 years creating an image with my gang and my racho dudes. I just, it's killing me, but I'm going to hang on to it. I don't know anything else to do because it's the only way I've ever lived. So I don't know what this is. And I remember sitting there in a room and trying to listen to what these people had to say. And see, when I don't understand anything, being full of myself, what I do is I make fun of it. I point my finger. Alcoholic. I remember my first impression, some elderly lady got up there and she said she drank for a long time. And I said to the guy sitting next to me, looked like she'd been somewhere for a long time. I bet you, she said, I used to drink. I bet you did. Bad stuff, too. See, I knew everything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know what's so much what ain't true. I don't even know what's wrong with me. I have the slightest idea. Most everybody who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't know what's wrong with them. How could you know? If you never read our book, you never had a description of the illness alcoholism. I don't know what's going on. I haven't got the slightest idea. I'll tell you something, it's funny. I just think about it every once in a while. These people used to get up on Sunday morning, and there were no freeways at that time. There was no money in the treatment of alcoholism. They bought their own gasoline. They spent their own time and effort away from their families. And they drove 100 miles up those old back roads to spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people that didn't want to listen to them. People like me who made fun of them sitting in the back row because I'm so hip. Let me tell you how sick that is. Took me a long time to figure this out. Here I am, sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home. And I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. There's something wrong with that. alcohol, but I'm hip. I don't know. I haven't got a clue. I haven't got any. I don't understand this thing. I don't know what's going on. You proved to me I was an alcoholic by what you said. You get up at podiums like this and you say, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. And everything is just wonderful. I'm back where I'm sitting in Inventory Point. I'm saying to myself, I'm not alcoholic then. How could I be alcoholic? Alcoholics are people who quit drinking and their life gets good. I quit drinking and I want to commit homicide. I want to attack psychiatrists. I want to rip off these straitjackets. I want to kill people who are trying to give me electroshock therapy. I just go on and on. That's me sober. I don't sleep at night when I'm sober. I lay awake in the middle of the night or I wake up in a stupor with terrible nightmares. Reoccurring nightmares, sitting handcuffed between two detectives in 1951 while they bury my baby brother. And the words of my mother screaming at me in the old Los Angeles County jail, look what you've done now, scum, you've killed our baby. That's what nightmare, that's my reoccurring nightmare. But then there were thousands and thousands of faces of people I had destroyed on my selfish, self-centered walk through life. And I don't know what to do about that. The only answer to that was I have some type of high-powered sedative that put me to sleep. But when I'm awake, that's what's going on. That's when I'm sober. So, because I hadn't investigated our book of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not understand that I was trying to equate a problem with alcohol with a deadly, debilitating spiritual illness called alcoholism. And to the alcoholic, alcohol is not the problem. Alcohol is a solution to the problem. There's a difference. Drinkers quit drinking and they're okay. The book says moderate to heavy drinkers can quit drinking given any type of reasonable excuse like losing a job or your marriage breaking up or something. Once they quit drinking, they drink again. They don't have to have a spiritual solution or a set of spiritual problems to overcome a spiritual illness because their problem's alcohol. I don't know that. What saved my life is a man wandered in there on a panel one Sunday that I knew did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. And he stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and he said something that all the great learned people, the therapists and the psychiatrists and the sociologists and the criminologists, the lawyers and the teachers and the preachers and the coaches didn't know. He looked down where I was sitting and he said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this. Nobody had ever said that to me. You know what they told me? Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things, you wouldn't have any problem. Every time they told me that, I wasn't doing that. I was just physically sober when I got that information from these great learned people that I am tonight. It's just physically sober. So I knew they didn't know anything either. So all that did was just put another nail in my coffin. That's all. Took me closer and closer to absolute and total hell that I was in before I got here. I went up to this man after the meeting, only because I knew him. And I said, how do you learn how to live? He said, I'm not interested in being sober from that day to this day and living this good life that's been afforded me here by my actions in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just want to learn how to sleep all night. That's all. He looked at me and he said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. Okay. The next day, I went over to the prison library and stole the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I got this big gangster image. I want you to know that I don't want my name alongside of anything as lame as Alcoholics Anonymous because I got a reputation to protect. And I snuck it in myself and nobody was around to start to read it. I didn't read the book Alcoholics Anonymous to create some type of a life of joy that's been handed to me on a silver platter here. Not at all. I read the book to prove to you my case was different. It wouldn't work for me. That's how dense I was and how self-imposed I was and how much different I thought I was. I was going to read your book, and I was going to come and tell you it wouldn't work for me because my case is different. And if you're sitting in this room tonight and you think your case is different, I feel sorry for you too, because it would be hard for you to overcome this illness being different from us. It'd be hard. If you don't identify with the illness of alcoholism and you don't overcome it, you're either going to die or go nuts. You don't have any choice to matter if you're alcoholic, Monica. I looked at a phrase in the doctor's opinion called a phenomenon of craving, and I started to think about my life. I started to think about all the opportunities that God had given me with this ability to play baseball. I was offered a scholarship while in a reform school to go to university, play baseball. I was offered a contract to play Major League Baseball while I was in San Quentin State Penitentiary. I had all these kind of things. And I thought that I never had anything to go because of that family I came from, a drunken bum. But I found out through this day that the reason I never had any of my opportunities or none of my talent exploited in life is because I took a drink. I just took a drink. And then the drink took a drink. And then the drink took me, Joey. And that's the story of my life. Right then and there, I did something that I had to do this morning that I've done every day of my life for over 55 years now. I assumed the responsibility for my own actions. That's it. It ain't alcohol's fault, it ain't drugs' fault, it ain't my family's fault, it ain't my gang's fault, it ain't the state of California's fault, it ain't nothing. I'm the guy that did the drinking. I'm the guy that runs the streets. I'm the guy that committed the atrocities. And the only thing alcohol did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to get here. Because it was the only balance that I had between sanity and insanity when I drank something or put something into my system that I shouldn't have in there. I walked out of a man's office 3 or 4 days later or a week or so later where I spent 3.5 hours with him. I told that man about every rotten, filthy, corruptible thing I'd ever done in my life. I told that man things that day that would have kept me in the penitentiary for the rest of my natural life. For only one reason and one reason only, because my book says that I have to be searching and fearless and thorough because I'm trying to build an ark to walk a free man. Now, I'm not talking about tearing down the walls of a penitentiary or walking out of a jailhouse somewhere or now, I guess, walking out of a treatment center somewhere. I'm talking about learning to walk in freedom wherever I'm at. That I'm able to walk down the street and know that I'm current in everything in my life. That's what freedom is all about. Freedom is doing what you ought to do because you want to. That is the greatest source of freedom I ever know. I spent the next year and a half of my life in this penitentiary trying to clean up the wreckage of my past. I wrote letters to judges and letters to places trying to clear this thing up. So when June the 4th, 1961 wandered around and I walked out of the penitentiary, all I wanted to do, the dream I had, was maybe someday you'd let me come and sit with you. But don't. I said to myself, if they would give me the privilege of coming and sitting with them, I'll do anything they ask me to do. For over 54 years of my life, I've done just about everything that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. And I don't know very many people whose life is any better than mine. Oh, it's not materialistically successful. I haven't went back and studied and got a big education. I just went to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and done what I've been asked to do here. I went home and see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on the couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I had to have a ringside seat watching this illness kill my mother. It took her 30 years, but it made it. You see, it is very slow and very agonizing and very true to its nature if you have it and you don't do anything about it. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. And right up to the moment my mother died, she never forgave me for being responsible for the death of my 17-year-old brother. But I just went to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. One night I went to a meeting, a guy walked by the name of Norm Alpe walked up to me and told me he's going to be my sponsor. I don't know what a sponsor is. Most people really around don't know what it is now. It's been bastardized so much, the sponsorship thing. My sponsor says to me, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I said, well, okay, what do you want me to do? And he said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. I didn't ask you. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? Oh, now I'm screwed. I said, what am I supposed to do, Norm? He said, why don't you do what I do? I said, what is it you do? He said, well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. I did book up the great mystery of sponsorship for you. Called Monkey See, Monkey Do. Be careful. There's a lot of people running around here wearing monkey suits ain't monkeys. They've got languages and answers all their own. Things like this. Don't drink no matter what. Do you know that alcoholics drink no matter what? I hate to bring that message home to you. Don't drink if your back piles off. I'm going to be drunk a long, long time before mine falls off. I cannot stand pain. Now, I'm not talking about physical pain. I've been beat into submission as a child, beat into submission as a young man, an adult. I've been thrown out of police cars in handcuffs while they were moving. They didn't just stop and say, get out. They just kept the car going and threw out. But I can't stand the pain of guilt and remorse and loneliness. I can't stand the sacrifice of my spiritual principles for some untold reason that would make me look better or feel better or act better. Because I can't stand it. I can't stand guilty actions, secrets, and little hidden things. And all through our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I've come to understand by reading our book and studying what it has to say for the last 55 years of my life, I've come to understand why people drink here. There's no mystery to me why people drink here anymore. And all the stories in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, about the people who drank, they all had one single thing, common thing. They forgot to enrich their spiritual life by constant effort work with other alcoholics. That's the secret here. The secret here is to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers, but there has to be a message. It's not to be a comedy routine. It has to be a message of recovery from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It's not what it was like or what happened to it and what it's trying to be like today. It's what I was like. What happened to me and what I'm trying to be like today. I haven't got there yet. But this is a spiritual program that grows along spiritual lines. My sponsor would not even think about me doing it. You know what the first thing he said to me was? Why don't you get a job and go to work? You're a bum. I said, I'm not a bum. He says, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He said, then you're an AA bum. Said, bums don't work. Get off of welfare, he said to me. I damn near hit him. I said, I ain't never been on welfare, Norm Alpe. If you ever say that to me again, I'm going to hurt you. I said, I hurt people, you know. He said, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution? Couldn't drive a car, didn't have a driver's license. You know what he said about that? Citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you who think you can get by with anything just because you don't drink anymore. Jesus. What kind of a self-centered thought process is that? My life is good now. I don't drink, so I don't have to obey the rules. If you're an alcoholic, you do. If you're an alcoholic and you don't learn to live by spiritual principles, sooner or later you will drink again or you will go insane. And I don't care who you are. I don't care what your counselor tells you. I don't care what your therapist counts you. I've been sitting in meetings with Alcoholics Anonymous for over 54 years of my life, four or five times a week, watching what happens around here. People who do not incorporate this program into their lives. Not incorporate their lives into program into their lives. It's just the most amazing thing that I know of. I can't tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet. Every day I've lived on the sunny side of the street. You know, regardless of everything else, I'm still a basic, fallible, sick, egotistical human being. I business failures, divorces. My mother drinking herself to death. I didn't understand that. The amends I was supposed to make to my mother, my sponsor told me I couldn't make it because I wanted my mother's forgiveness. I needed my mother's forgiveness. He said, she ain't going to give it to you. I thought about that. I said, well, she has to. What am I supposed to do? And this is where a sponsor comes in, invaluable sponsor. Not to tell you which side of the bed to get up every morning and what to use when you go to the bathroom, which hand to use, or, you know, go get me a cup of coffee, or dress properly. Or a sponsor imparts this invaluable information that it may not understand the moment it's given to you. My sponsor said, your mother's never going to forgive you. I said, I have to have a forgiveness. He said, forget it. God forgave you when you walked into the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only forgiveness you'll ever, really ever need. I said, then what am I supposed to be about my mother? He said, why don't you try being her son? Why don't you do your mother what her son's supposed to do with your mother? So I spent 30 years being my mother's son. But when the time came for my mother to leave this world, I was the only one sitting at her bedside. My brother didn't come. Nobody else came. And for 30 years, I did think, like, go to visit my mother where she was drunk or sober. It didn't make much difference. And I stood her abuse when she was drunk and her joy when I take my children to visit their grandmother. You know, until my mother died, I'm sitting at that bedside that day, my mother, holding my mother's hand, and there was nothing there. No guilt, nothing left unsaid in my life. I had been done exactly what I was supposed to do all my life. I could only do it for 30 years because that's the only time I knew how to do it. The rest of the time, I remember my mother coming to visit me institution after institution, sitting in jury boxes in courtrooms all over Los Angeles County. My mother would say to me, promise me that you won't do this anymore. I couldn't do that. Before I got to you, I couldn't make a promise to my mother that I was ever going to live a day without getting loaded again. If you love me, she'd say, you wouldn't do this. Well, I couldn't say that I love her because it wasn't in my vocabulary. Selfish, self-centered people like me don't love people. We just take and use people. There's a difference, you know. But my sponsor was invaluable to me. Invaluable. And then there was another strong influence in my life, a man who simply basically adopted me when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous. The first time I saw him in the penitentiary, he came up and kissed me on the cheek. I damn near hit him. I didn't know that day that man was set the pattern for me to live my life by teaching me how a father teaches a son. So he'd put me in his lap and rock me to sleep. He'd put me in his car and he would drive me to places and he would talk to me about things of the Spirit. And I'd say things to him like, why we were chosen. And he would answer with this, throw that pamphlet out the window. We're not chosen. I'd say, yeah, I'm chosen. He said, what makes you think so? I said, because I'm sober. I'm sober and my mother, who's a far better person than I will ever be, can't get sober. Why is that? And he gave me this little simple antidote that makes more sense to me today than the first time he gave it to me. He said, Johnny, that's because you've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I said, what do God's kids act like? He said, well, they just wander around in the world and try to help people get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free, and they do it for fun. What a novel concept of life. When I asked him about my marriage, how I said, how much you got a good marriage? How much was going? He said, well, when I got sober, I went home and asked Mr. C if she'd give me the privilege of loving her. I never asked her to do anything ever again. She didn't have to cook. She didn't have to clean the house. She didn't have to clean nothing. She just has to let me love her. That works because I'm married to a lovely lady. And when I am at myself and thinking about that and not full of myself for some foolish, selfish reason, what a wonderful household we have because she loves me back. It's just the most amazing thing that I know of. What great information. But you see, it's good to have information, but it doesn't become wisdom until you put it into action. You can read this book and study this book and have all the phraseology in the world of the book. You can sit in meetings and listen to a dozen tapes all the time and you get all this in. But it don't mean crap if it's just going around in your head. You have to put the information here into action. There's a whole chapter in our book about that, into action. What it means. And I've had some joy by putting this program into action beyond my wildest imagination. For years and years now, once a year, the warden of Folsom State Penitentiary invites me to come up and talk to a banquet of 300 or 400 convicts up there. A place where I was at when I was 21 years old in 1951. And I go up there every year, and I don't know, a couple years ago I was walking out of there and the warden, my escort, and he said, well, you look a little down, Johnny, what's going on? And I said, I can't really put a finger on it. And he said, man, you're walking out of this penitentiary, you're supposed to be full of joy. And I don't feel full of joy. And we finally got to the gate and it dawned on me, so I turned to him and I said, Warden, I'll tell you why I don't feel good. He said, why? I said, I just talked to 300 or 400 hard shell convicts. Most of them will never get out of this institution. And for the ones who will get out of this institution, I'll probably never see them at an AA meeting. That bothers me. He said, then why do you come? Why do you come up here? I mean, you take all weekend, you leave your family, you drive up here, you fly up here, you stay all night, you get up the next morning, make a long day of it, and go back home, go to work. Why do you do that? And I said, well, maybe one of these days there'll be another Johnny Harris sitting on the back row in some penitentiary when I go in. I may never see it, but that's the best reason. You see, somebody took their time to come and see me. And in so doing, they incorporated in me a great legacy of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Why wouldn't I want to do the same thing? Why wouldn't I want to carry this message the way it was carried to me? Because it brought about such a fruitful life, a joyous, happy life. And the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous have been all around me. Things that you've taught me that have passed on. Why wouldn't I? If I hadn't gotten anything out of Alcoholics Anonymous, except put my pot in a jug and my butt in a chair, I wouldn't have to do nothing. Just keep the plug in the jug and my butt in a chair. What happens when your butt gets tired? Sore. There's a little story I need to tell you that explains the whole thing. It explains to you why my sponsor made it necessary for me to wear a coat and a tie when I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to share in that meeting. I go to a place in San Jose once a year, have for a lot of years, and I used to go up there with a guy I sponsored on his birthday by the name of Jim Bayard, who's dead now. And I walked in there one Saturday night, and I'm pretty much dressed the way I am right now, and I move in and sit down, and there's some young kid come dragging his leg over there. That little walk that I invented in Juvenile Hall in 1941. And he's all hip, you know, he's all leaning back. And yeah, man! I said, yeah. He said, are you Johnny Harris? And I said, yeah. And he said, you don't look like him. I said, oh, what does he look like? He said, oh, yeah, man. I said, well, if I had earrings, leather jacket on, pants, goatee and a beard, and talking out of the corner of my mouth, use mother every word, that fix you? Yeah, it ain't. I said, you don't understand, young man. I live by a set of spiritual principles. If practice is a way of life, evolves that stuff out of you. He said, the hell you say. He turned and walked off. I said, well, made another friend. About a year or so later, I'm at a meeting Saturday night in Reno, Nevada, and I walk into the room, pretty much like a room like this. And I walk down the front to get me a cup of coffee, and I look over and there sit that kid. Well, it ain't the same kid no more. He's got a pair of pants on and a collared shirt, and he's got a haircut. Somehow or other, he got rid of his jewelry, the one on his face. He stood up and said, I said, oh. Yeah? And he said, I just drove all the way over here from San Jose to tell you something. And I said, okay. And he said, I want to let you know that I've learned to live by the same set of spiritual principles that you have. You realize how easy it would have been for me to kill that kid in San Jose? Well, not by physically attacking him. By getting down and letting him see Johnny. You know what I mean, man? How come ain't none of these clowns ever say to you when you're out there looking at them, let's go get up. You know what they say? Let's go get down, baby. You know why they want to tell you to get up? Because if you're living up your testimony to the lie that they're living, every single person, according to my book, Alcoholics Anonymous, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is a basic fundamental idea of God. Our book says the main purpose of it is to introduce you to a power greater than yourself. It doesn't say to introduce you to a life full of agony and defeat because you can't drink no more. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I can tell you is very simply this. This is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much.